Team hopes their mushroom remediation work could one day be applied on a large scale, but that's still quite a long ways down the road.
So our role in the Fire Grant Challenge and working on this project here is to see how can they scale up this innovation in a Gitxsan community or in a First Nation community. So there's like a whole piece of that to be like, oh yeah, does this work up here? So a ton of this like project specifically was on just like relationship building and understanding different cultural philosophies and approaches and protocols, data sovereignty and collection processes, and then recognizing that nobody is up here is really an expert mycologist, but we're all expert land people. So leaning into folks who have knowledge in other areas to finish this project has been really helpful.
The Cold Fire team is building partnerships to expand their mushroom-based soil restoration work. Next year, they're planning a project with a Gitxsan Wilp interested in applying the method on damaged cut blocks, using fungi to generate soil after cultural or prescribed burns. They're also exploring new techniques like liquid inoculation, which sprays mushroom juice directly onto soil or wood chips, an easier, low-waste alternative to plastic spawn blocks.
So this is actually 3 years in the making, being able to work with Jeff Ravage and the Coalitions and Collaboratives crew, and then the community of Sikidak we've been partnered with for a number of years on a number of different projects, but they were really gracious in giving us the space for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
And very interested in the outcome because of their work towards food security and agricultural expansion here. Yeah. They are nearly a food sovereign community with the food sources that they have here. And then any way that we can collaborate and provide education and resources, because it's great to be able to have the connections with partners. And like I said, Smithereens Mushrooms has been awesome. Like, they've just helped us with so many random requests. Mm-hmm. And they're starting to build their mycoremediation branch of their business as well. So the more that we can partner, the better, because we're not experts in the mycology field, as I mentioned. But the more that we can have our local capacity to do some of this work too is also really one of our goals.
The team also hopes to offer mycology and mycoremediation training through the SDOT Farm School's Adult Education Program. By learning to identify, harvest, and cultivate local fungi, participants can help preserve rare mushroom species that support soil health and climate resilience. The goal ultimately is to safely store and grow these beneficial mushrooms for future restoration projects. Thank you so much to Anissa Watson for taking the time to speak with me and show me more about the project called Cold Fire. If you'd like to learn more, visit Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition on Facebook or on their website. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
Thank you to Pamela Hassan from CICK News for that very interesting and informative piece on the possibility of training mycelium to essentially eat wood waste. So we will see where that goes in the future. And if there are any updates, I'll let you all know on a future episode of Speak Up. We're about 33 minutes into this hour, and I thought right now would be a great time for a little bit of a music break. This one comes from another Vancouver local, John Bentley, and this track is titled Down in the Depths. Thank you. From North Vancouver, this is Danny Nazvatarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. In July of this year, the Museum and Archives of North Vancouver, or MANOVA, unveiled its latest feature exhibit, titled, Are We There Yet? The Sustainable Transportation Journey. Found in MANOVA's feature gallery space, the exhibit includes archival material and photographs related to the transportation history of the North Shore, its evolution, and where transportation in the region could be headed. A unique addition to the exhibit is its option for community feedback, which allows those that attend to write down and submit their suggestions for the future of transit on the North Shore. CJSF took a trip down to Minova to see the exhibit for ourselves, where we were greeted by the museum's director, Zoe Makoff de Miranda. We sat down for a conversation and learned more about why this exhibit came to fruition.
Minova, one of the things that we're really interested in doing with our future gallery space is thinking about what topics are important to the community here today, what conversations are people having, or, you know, what do we want to create dialogue around? And transportation is definitely a hot topic of conversation. So we wanted to get involved in that conversation and create space for dialogue around the history of transportation and what the future here might look like.
When entering the gallery space, one of the first things we noticed was a series of political cartoons depicting congestion within the North Shore, as well as a newspaper that exclaimed the need for rapid transit in the area. This is an issue that is still being talked about today within the North Shore. When I first saw this cartoon, I thought it was from the 1990s. Thankfully, I was quickly corrected.
So a couple of things. First, I'm actually going to correct you because those drawings are not from the 90s. They're actually from the late 60s and early 70s. Okay. So they're even older than you thought. They are political cartoons from a newspaper that was called the North Shore Citizen, which was the precursor to the North Shore News. They're by an artist named David Allevoyne, and we have a collection of his cartoons in our archives. And they are from the late 60s, early 70s, sort of talking about congestion, the problem with congestion on the North Shore. And I think one of the reasons you thought they were from the 90s is there's one drawing in particular. There's a gentleman sitting in traffic coming down the cut trying to get across the Second Arrows Bridge, the Iron Workers Memorial Bridge, and he's reading a newspaper that says rapid transit North Van to Vancouver by 1990 cost $300 million, and then at the bottom of the comic it says, you know, great news, you know, for $300 million, we only need to put up with this for 20 more years. So that was in 1970 saying, oh, we only have to wait till 1990 to get rapid transit. It's now 2025. And we do have BRT, the bus rapid transit that's coming. We actually have the C-Bus, which did not yet exist at the time that comic was written. But yeah, certainly, you know, it's interesting to look back and see that congestion actually is not a new problem. It's something that's been happening on the North Shore for a long time, and we really need to, as citizens and municipalities, think about what solutions are in the future.
Dave Miranda and I then discussed the public feedback aspect of this exhibit and some of the ideas the people have been writing for the future of transportation on the North Shore.
When we created that space, I kind of anticipated that we would potentially get a lot of negative feedback, sort of like almost like an in-person Facebook, if you will, an opportunity for people to complain. And I've actually been really pleasantly surprised. The majority of the comments that we've been getting are really constructive. I think people really have ideas. They live in the community. They know the area. They know the neighborhoods, and they have, you know, ideas about what they'd like to see. So it's been really constructive. I think there's the typical things like, you know, a third crossing, you know, extension of the SkyTrain. There have been some comments about, you know, maybe adding another C-Bus route. What if there was a C-Bus that went from West Van, you know, where the ferry building gallery is? There used to be sort of a ferry dock there, for the small ferries that went across the inlet. And so the idea of what if we had ferries that went from West Van over to near UBC, for example. There's people that talk about wanting to bring back the streetcars. So it's quite fascinating. I think people really want solutions.
We then discussed how Minova has engaged with local municipalities as well as the Tsleil-Waututh and Squamish Nations for this exhibit.
So we do work really closely with the municipalities. When we were developing the exhibition, I did reach out to the transportation departments and let them know this was a topic that we would be covering. We know that BRT, Bus Rapid Transit, is coming. That's something the municipalities have been very engaged on, and also the local nations as well. There's a group called North Shore Connects, which is the three North Shore municipalities, so North Van City, North Van District, West Vancouver, and the Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, kind of working together to talk about transportation infrastructure. So, you know, really in terms of the city and district in particular, really it's us providing feedback following the exhibition, and a lot of folks from the municipalities and the nations have been engaged in terms of coming in and sort of seeing what we're talking about through the exhibition.
Later on, we were given a tour of the exhibit and all of its archival materials, including an old bus fare collection box used in the 60s and 70s that makes a different noise depending on the value of coin that you insert.
I'm going to do a quarter first. Okay, that's a quarter. There's a dime. A nickel. And here comes the penny, which, you know, those are hard to find these days, so we didn't actually hear the sound right away at the beginning of the exhibition. We had to track down some pennies.
We were then shown some materials and transportation vehicles that signify the sustainable transportation possibilities on the North Shore.
Yeah, so one of the things when we're talking about sort of sustainable transportation and the future of transportation, there's a lot that's being done at a municipal level and actually through TransLink as well, looking at active transportation. So that's improved walking and biking routes and thinking about different ways for people to move around our city. So we have two bikes here that are from the 1930s and 40s, kind of just showing you know, what the bike technology was at the time. These are from our museum collection. And then next to that, we actually have an e-cargo bike. So this is an electric bike. It has a cargo carrier. This is obviously a pretty big departure from what was available in the 1930s and 1940s. And so this is just sort of to show the evolution in some of that technology of what's available, you know, that makes getting around on a bike a little bit easier for those who are able to ride a bike. And actually, the bike we have is from the e-cargo bike program that's put on through the District of North Vancouver and the City of North Vancouver, where through the Evo app, you can actually rent the e-cargo bikes, which is pretty amazing. So they're available to pick up at some of the local North Vancouver District public libraries. And so again, just looking at different infrastructure that's available to help people move around in a sustainable way.
Lastly, we asked Zoe Makoff de Miranda what she hopes some of the key takeaways are for those who attend this exhibit. Here's what she had to say.
You know, I think one of the takeaways that we'd like people to have is to think about what role they can play towards a more sustainable future of transportation on the North Shore. And I want to say that sustainable means both in terms of the environment, from an environmental perspective, but also sustainable in terms of our growing population. You know, the population is continuing to grow, and, you know, we do have... There are a lot of people on the North Shore that do have a car. You know, that's not accessible for everyone, but for people who do have a vehicle, you know, I think it's not a question of saying, you know, get rid of your car and, you know, all cars are bad. It's really just to say, you know, maybe think about your routine and are there small incremental changes you can make that can help contribute to greater sustainability. So maybe is there one day a week that maybe you don't need your car? Is there a certain activity? Maybe can you take the C-bus or ride a bike? And if we all sort of consider that and think about small incremental changes, that would overall help us get to a more sustainable place.
Once again, that was our conversation with Zoe Makoff de Miranda, the director of the Museum and Archives of North Vancouver. This exhibit, Are We There Yet? The Sustainable Transportation Journey, is available to be seen by the public until March 1st, 2026. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Bird Note. Why do birds consistently follow certain routes in their great journeys across the continents? Pathways of migration evolved, shaped by the wind. During the height of the last ice age 18,000 years ago, much of North America was covered by glaciers, yet ice-free breeding habitat for songbirds, such as the Black Pole Warbler, remained in what is now Alaska and parts of Western Canada. Studies of fossil pollen found in muddy lake bottoms show that consistent winds blew across the continent on a northwest to southeast heading of 155 degrees. As Scott Weidensall recounts in his book, Living on the Wind, the ice cap produced a powerful high-pressure center sitting over central Canada, pumping strong northwest winds, precisely the conditions that would aid migrants on a 155-degree heading. The birds rode these tailwinds to traverse the vast ice fields. And today, although the continental glaciers have melted, the birds still follow this compass bearing on their way to wintering grounds in South and Central America and the Caribbean. Natural selection and the vicissitudes of life on the wing require that birds respond exquisitely to natural conditions. Their lives depend on their attunement to the world around them, and particularly during migration, to the wind. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
All right, we are back with Speak Up. This is your host, Danny Nesvedarani, for the hour. We have about 7 minutes left, but make sure you stay tuned. Coming up right at 11 a.m. as per usual on essentially every weekday here at CJSF is none other than Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Make sure you stay tuned for that. But before then, we have one more piece. This comes from Jules Bugel from Montreal and CKUT Radio. This is about a Montrealer who sailed with the Freedom Flotilla's Canadian crew in an attempt to provide aid to Gaza. While there's technically a ceasefire deal at the moment, this is obviously still an ongoing situation and still a piece that is relevant to listen to. So without further ado, here is Jules Bugel from CKUT.
Canadians are sailing to Gaza as part of the humanitarian mission known as the Freedom Flotilla. And one of those is from right here in Montreal.
My name is Nima Machouf. I'm epidemiologist and public health specialist. And I'm on board of Conscience, which is one of the boats in the Freedom Flotilla coalition.
Machouf is one of five Canadians on board the Conscience, which is currently sailing north of Egypt in the Mediterranean Sea. Like the 40-odd boats captured last week in the global Samud flotilla, the Conscience aims to break through Israel's control of movement and aid in and out of the occupied territory.
We want to break the siege of Gaza.
Israel has maintained a naval blockade since 2009, and there have been several flotillas to try and break it over the years. But with Israel's takeover of aid to Gaza this spring and a UN-recognized famine and genocide, those attempts have taken on a new urgency.
Medicine don't go in, nourriture don't go in, so now we have a population who is hungry.
Machouf spoke to CKUT on Saturday night. She said amid the resolve, there's fear as well. At least 10 boats in the global Samud flotilla were attacked by drones off the coast of Greece before all 42 ships were boarded by Israeli forces last week. Israel has said they've deported over 300 of the almost 500 people in that flotilla. National Post reports there are two Canadians within that count. Of those remaining in detention, more than 40 are reportedly on hunger strike, and some of those released allege harsh conditions. Israel alleges that the flotilla effort violates international maritime and humanitarian law, though experts in the field disagree. as does Mashouf.
This operation normally doesn't have to be dangerous at all. Bringing medicines and food for a population who need it. But because Israel doesn't let us go, because Israel doesn't want Palestinian people have access to these goods that we are going to give them, they attack us.
Mashouf has been outspoken in her advocacy for the rights of Palestinians. She was one of four Quebecers who was meant to take part in a flotilla last year, which was ultimately cancelled. This year, she says that those in support of her effort should put pressure on the government to stop all arms sales to Israel, work toward an end of the occupation of Palestine, and help ensure the Conscience and other boats can make it through unharmed.
We are complicit of this genocide.
For CKUT, I'm Jules Bujal with the Local Journalism Initiative.
Once again, thank you to Jules Bujal for that piece, which, you know, regardless of any sort of ceasefire deal that has been made since, this is still something that is ongoing. And when I say ongoing, I mean that there are still lives being lost. There are still Palestinians being killed. And there's still a lot of aid and a lot of rebuilding that needs to be done. So it's not something that's going to go away, and it's not something that can just stop being reported on now that there is a technical ceasefire deal in writing. That being said, we have reached the end of this hour, and before we get on to Democracy Now!, we got a few minutes left, so I thought I would play off with a track from another local Vancouver artist by the name of, or local Vancouver group, mind you, by the name of Nada. This is Red Light. Once again, thank you all so much for tuning in this hour, and make sure you stay tuned. We've got lots of great programming this today, whether that be typically Tuesdays, Democracy Now!. It's a lot going on, so make sure you stay tuned.
So I don't pop out like a jar-top. Taking care of me and mine, better call off. All the shit I had to do, better fall off. To a new dimension, but my peace of mind protecting. Baby, got a one-way ticket, don't test me. Better lose these digits, don't text me. If your child calling on my line, make sure your signal's on hi-fi. Can't ask for you every time. But your network isn't that work. I'm fine. Just need above average. Sensitive to waves.